Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to talk about wildfires to start the show today. According to the National Interagency Fire Center, about 8.3 million acres have been burned this year because of wildfires. Talking with a couple of wildfire experts who work in Wisconsin, one of them, Lauren Larson, is the UW Extension's natural resources educator in forestry for the northwestern region of Wisconsin. Lauren, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and Jolene Ackerman as well, our guest. Jolene is the Wildland Urban Interface Coordinator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Jolene Ackerman, thank you for joining us as well.
Well, thanks for having me.
What questions do you have about wildfires as you listen to these two experts? I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jolene, let's start with you. You were with us a few years back, but maybe refresh our memories about what you do in your position.
Yeah, a few years ago, I was on with Hannah Spall from the Nature Conservancy, and we did a good fire, bad fire segment talking about prescribed fire and wildfire. So my job with the DNR is I do mostly neighborhood and community planning efforts where we promote national initiatives like FireWise communities and community wildfire protection plans, where we first like to educate communities about their wildfire risk. In Wisconsin, it's maybe not widely known that we have a substantial fire risk here. And then we also work with them to do vegetation management. We call it fuels management because some of our vegetation can be like a fuel, especially parts of the state where we have a lot of pine and oak trees.
So
most of my work is...
They can go up in a hurry.
They can, absolutely, especially in the springtime.
Lauren, what do you do with the UW Extension?
I am one of the forestry natural resources educators for the state. So what that means is my team and I work across the state to take the best forest management and forestry research and deliver it to forest landowners in places where they're comfortable learning. So we do that in modern ways and very more technically savvy ways.
Yeah, and probably work a lot with Jolene and others at the DNR as well.
I do, yes. Jolene and I have together quite a bit since I started.
At least virtually, if not in person. What's going on right now with the Colorado wildfires? Are you up to date on that? Maybe Jolene?
Yeah, so we do assist other states with their, if there's a substantial wildfire problem in other states. What happens is at times when our fire danger is lower, like now, especially in parts of the state that already have snow, we are able to offer up personnel and equipment to other states and even Canadian provinces. So what happens is if it's a state like right now, Colorado and California have it especially bad, and they just cannot handle all the wildfires and the resource needs with their local resources. So what they do is they put out their needs through the National Interagency Coordinating Center. And then if we have available staff or equipment, then we can look to see if we can assist that either with sending individuals or with teams. So we do currently have staff on incidents in Colorado and California, which honestly is very unusual that we have that we're still providing out-of-state assistance into October.
Yeah. So the fires are still going on in California.
There are. The last I heard, there are still at least 24 active wildfires in California.
Wow. Lauren, how have those fires affected us in Wisconsin?
That's a great question. Some of the ways that fires out west can affect us in Wisconsin are some things that you may have seen during the summertime, which would be a decrease in air quality. So you'll notice that it's a little hazy. Nothing compared to what they experience out west during the fire season, but we do get a little bit of that that can come across from the western states and even down from Canada. That's probably the main way that we are impacted by those fires. Now that Jolene mentioned is some of our crews and resources go out west so that we can help them, which means they're not at home doing some of the things that they would normally be doing.
I remember being in Ontario, Canada, on a fishing trip, and there was a fire somewhere, and a plane, planes were coming down without stopping, just kind of grazing the water and picking up water and taking it off to dump on top of the fire. So I was thinking, well, that's, and it was the first time I'd seen this quite a few years ago. So that's a tool. I'm wondering what tools and techniques do firefighters have available when they are fighting fires?
So I have to mention or speak to what you were just talking about. So Wisconsin is a member of the Great Lakes Forest Fire Compact, and that is a partnership between Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, and the Canadian provinces of Manitoba and Ontario. And so through our partnership, we're able to request mutual aid. And that is like if we have significant fire activity in Wisconsin, we could call on Canada or even Minnesota for access to one of those planes that you're talking about. Those are called CL-215s, and it's pretty slick. They can scoop water up from any of our many lakes as long as ice is off, and then dump the water on the fire. So that's one of the beauties of having partnerships already in place that when fires do occur, you can request for that mutual aid.
Yeah, it was actually really cool to watch, and I was thinking to myself, man, that must be a good pilot to be able to accomplish that. Must take a lot of training. So the fires today that are fought today, I imagine, Jolene, although it's similar. There's some things like the planes going down into the lakes, but they're the fires now are fought a little differently than they were in the past for the most part, aren't they? Or am I wrong?
Well, we're mostly in Wisconsin, a ground based firefighting. Our fires are mostly fought from the ground, I should say.
Sure, sure.
And so we have personnel, and we have equipment. And I would say the bread and butter of our equipment is something called the tractor plow. And it is just like it sounds. It digs a line that will create a bare mineral soil break around a fire. And so that's how we create our containment lines. The tractor plows go to the right and the left of the fire, and then they try to pinch it off at the top. And meanwhile, then firefighters will, once the line is created, then they'll take a drip torch and do a back burn. And so they will try to go from that mineral soil break and then burn up to where the wildfire is occurring. So it effectively eliminates the fuel. And that is how we contain the majority of our fires. In the springtime, when things get a little bit dicier, and that's also when most of our fires occur, we have contracts with something called single-engine air tankers, and we bring those planes in actually from the western United States when fire danger is lower there, and they come here in case we need to also fight fire from the air.
Wow.
And we also have airplanes that can fly reconnaissance for us, and that is essential for the safety of our firefighters. They can call down and give intel on the fire behavior, the way it's moving, if they feel that the ground resources need to move to a different location. It's a very well-oiled machine, let's say.
Yeah. You know, Rebecca, one of our listeners, wonders if there's such a thing as raking the forests. That came up as a conversation, I think, with the president at one point in relationship to the California fires. And I was trying to think, oh, how do you rake the forests? Anyway, is there some technical way that they can do something like that?
Boy,
or not that you know of?
You know, if I could think of any way of raking the forest, I think it would be done with prescribed fire, you know, where you could burn away that ground litter that can carry a surface fire, that can improve habitat, that can, in our state, reduce invasive species and invigorate natives. But I think the only raking that is going to be done is on a person's individual property, which can also reduce the fuels around home, but nothing like that could be done on a large scale.
Someone else wondered what led to these huge wildfires that we've seen here recently?
Yeah, so there's a combination of factors. It's a very complicated issue. Of course, some people want to blame Smokey Bear, saying that we have a long history of putting out fires, and so there's buildup of so much forest fuel, and that is part of the problem. There's quite a bit of the stands are dense because we've eliminated a lot of the cultural burning that's happened. There's not nearly as much prescribed burning that's happening that should be. And there's also, we're sticking our own man-made fuel into the wildland fire environment. And so when you pack houses into an area, they also become fuel for a wildfire. And then, of course, there's the climate change issue, which it seems to be making hot climates hotter, dry climates drier, and most definitely contributing to the intensity of the fires.
Taking a look at wildfires in Wisconsin today with our two guests, Jolene Ackerman, the Wildland Urban Interface Coordinator with the Wisconsin DNR, and Lauren Larson, who is the UW Extension Natural Resources Educator in Forestry for the Northwestern region of Wisconsin. Questions for them, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Have you done anything to make your property less susceptible to wildfire? We'll talk about how you can do that as well. But if you have an experience, love to hear that as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. So what are the chances we will have another wildfire in Wisconsin? That's one of the things we can talk about with our two guests today, Jolene Ackerman from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Lauren Larson, Natural Resources Educator in Forestry for UW Extension in the Northwestern region of Wisconsin. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm trying to remember, when was the last time Wisconsin had a major wildfire?
Well, the last big one, so to speak, was in 2013 in northwest Wisconsin. It was named the German Road Fire. It burned about 7,500 acres, went through a couple of counties. I want to say there were about 100 properties that were affected. I think 25 homes burned down, 25, 23, something like that.
Man, so there were a lot were lost there. And you wonder how insurance, does a typical insurance, homeowner's insurance cover something like that?
Not necessarily. That tends to be a hazard insurance that someone would have to take on in addition to a normal home insurance claim.
Oh, so if you lose the house, you could lose everything.
I think, Jolene, you feel free to jump in, but I think it partially depends on whether or not it's in an urban setting or a rural setting. So if it's a house fire, that's considered different than a fire that consumes a house.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of a separate kind of insurance, like when you live on a lake, for example, and there's flooding or something, you have to have special insurance to cover that, as opposed
Correct.
To a water leak in your house that is going to be covered by the insurance. Got it. Peter from Eden emailed to ask if techniques used by indigenous peoples are used to fight wildfires. And I'm not sure what techniques indigenous folks use, but.
Yeah. So I'm not sure about the techniques that the caller has in mind for fighting wildfire. Like I was explaining earlier, it's a combination between people power and machinery, with our tractor plows really being what we lean on to create that mineral soil field break in a very quick and efficient manner. And then perhaps what would be more akin to an indigenous person's way of lighting fire is we backburn up to the fire. I think that perhaps our way of applying prescribed fire would be more like similar to what Native people did, although we try to do it in a little safer manner by having a backburn conducted before a head fire is lit. And I think in a lot of cases, Native people actually lit head fires to do things like drive game or to burn off larger areas.
And I think in short, maybe what they're asking is indigenous peoples for much longer than we have fought fire with fire. And that's essentially what Jolene is saying, is that with prescribed burning, especially, we try to fight fire with fire by identifying the ecosystems and the forests and the areas that need it the most, and using that as a management tool to control the fuel that builds up, to not at the same time fight fire with fire. And also the same can be thought of when she mentions the back, lighting the line or lighting the backfire during an active wildfire.
Hmm. Well, what kinds of things can people do to prevent or prepare your home, I should say, for a wildfire?
That's a great question. There's quite a few things that you can do, and I would say it starts with a more philosophical question of what resources do you have, how much time do you have, and where can you concentrate your efforts? Because I think the list of things that you can do is quite extensive, but the best thing you can do is what you're able to do. And there are, between the DNR, Jolene's website and our website, we have checklists that you can look at and download. So DNR website, search wildfire checklist. You could also go to woodlandinfo.org and search wildfire checklist. But specifically, some of the things that you can think about are thinning the trees around your home, so keeping them adequate distance so that the crowns aren't touching, keeping the leaf litter and other flammable debris off the ground, off your roofs and your eaves during fire seasons, and considering just in general what flammable hazards are present and how close they are to your home.
Yeah, I was. We had an author of a book on a fire that occurred in the Boundary Waters area, and it was very interesting because he talked a lot about This was a huge fire, and I'm trying to remember the year of it. But part of the book was about the people who had homes in there, in that area, and what they did. And of course, some of them lost their homes, but some people did what you were talking about, and then also had their had hoses that they were running on their own property and on their own homes, and actually some of them were able to save their homes.
You know, one thing I tell people when I meet with a homeowner, we offer something called a home ignition zone assessment, where we can walk around a person's property with them and then point out things that they should modify or replace or remove in order to make their home more wildfire ready. And one of the things I say to people is that they should walk around their home with an imaginary match in their hand. And if there's any place where they would not feel comfortable throwing down a match, that's where they should do the work. Because what we're learning about fires is that the research is showing that it's not more often that it's this big wall of flames that destroys homes, but rather it's the ember shower that's produced from the wildfire that could be even a mile away, or it's a slow-moving surface fire. And so what is really important is for people to remove the debris, the leaves and the pine needles that collect right next to the home, in the rain gutters, underneath decks, which really can be done, you know, just with your manpower and not necessarily cost you anything other than your time.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. I was thinking, Jill reminded me about the author. The book was about the Ham Lake Fire of 2007. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that fire, but it was an enormous fire that occurred in the Boundary Waters area. Are you familiar with it?
I vaguely remember that one. Yeah, there's so many of them.
Yeah, it was a big one. I'm sure Wisconsin firefighting folks were probably involved in it. I know there were a lot of people brought in from the West to deal with it. From out west. Bruce in Cedarburg, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I was wondering how the large stands of dead ash trees due to the emerald ash borer might contribute to a potential wildfire.
Oh, interesting. What do you think? Lauren, do you want to take a crack?
Yeah, that's a great question. So anything that's standing in dead is essentially a matchstick. One of the things that prescribed fire can do is to clear out some of that dead and dying vegetation, including some of those dead and down trees, and really clear out the standing fuels that were just described. So standing dead trees, downed ladder fuels that can let a fire move from the ground upward into the trees and start a crown fire. So the more dead wood you have, and beetle kill and other forest pests are ways that trees die, and the more likely you can have a fire spread, or the bigger a range a fire can move through.
Hmm. Do we have we had many of the fires that you would call a crown fire that are going from one, you know, top of one tree to the next?
Yeah, absolutely. In the springtime, there's something that happens in our pines. It's called the spring dip. And it lasts for, it could be 3 or 4 weeks, generally around the month of April into May. And so it's something that happens at the microscopic level, nothing that you can see with, you know, your own two eyes, but the moisture in pine needles goes down while the starch content goes up. And that combination, we call it the spring dip, and it makes pine trees incredibly flammable. And so every spring when we have fires that occur in our pine forests, we'll see torching. And if there's enough trees that are close together, then the fire will move from one treetop to the next. And that's what we call crown fire. Now, if it gets into an area where there's a large swath of pine trees, an example would be some of our industrial pine plantations,
yeah.
Then the fire can move until it runs out of fuel, until it hits a body of water, a change in vegetation, or a potato field, something that's big enough that can make the fire drop to the ground. That reminds me of the Cottonville fire that burned in 2005. That burned 3,400 acres, and it was mostly in a pine plantation.
And how fast does that move? Pretty fast if you've got wind, I assume.
Yeah, so our fires here are wind-driven, and they move very quickly. So that 3,400 acres, I want to say it burned in about 7 or 8 hours. So by the end of the day, the fire was essentially on the ground, and we were able to get a containment line around it. That's the difference between our fires here and the ones out west is we have very quick wind-driven fires that are generally over within the first 24 hours, whereas the fires that you're seeing in the western United States, they can burn for days or weeks, sometimes even months.
And I don't know, the large swaths of land that are basically without a lot of breaks out west, is that a little different as well from what we have here?
Yeah, very much so. There's larger swaths of public land that are, in preservation in the west. In Wisconsin, our lands are very fragmented. We have multiple ownership. Even within our public lands, there's often inholdings of private lands. And, of course, we have a ton of water bodies, 15,000 lakes and plenty of rivers. We also have a robust agricultural community. And so with the fragmentation of our forested land, we won't see fires that will burn 100,000 acres, but we definitely have potential for fires burning thousands of acres and many homes.
Yeah, yeah, and 3,000 or 100,000, if it's your home that's in the path, you don't care. If it's only 3,000 acres, but it's 25 homes, that's a huge loss of property and hopefully not lives. Have we lost many lives in fires?
So almost every year there is injury and sometimes death. I would say every year or two there's a death. And it's generally, so we've lost firefighters. We've lost a couple of firefighters and one of our pilots. And then there's also our fire department partners can maybe succumb to a heart attack while they're working on a fire. More often we see injuries or deaths when a person is burning a pile of leaves or brush on their property, and it gets away from them. And in a panic, they try to put it out themselves. And, of course, they're not going to be wearing, the firefighting gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the stress of it can cause a heart attack. They can get burns. That kind of death we do see, sadly, way too often, almost on a yearly basis.
Hmm. Ed in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Ed.
Thank you. About 5 years ago, we were traveling through the Black Hills, and we noticed piles of wood in the woods. And when I asked a ranger, they said they contacted prisoners to come in and clean up that stuff to prevent fires. That's all I have to say.
Oh, okay. So kind of, that is kind of like raking the woods a little bit. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. Dan in La Crescent, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a question on the species, whether it be plants, trees, or insects, especially the native ones that are invigorated by fire and maybe haven't seen that type of fire action, especially down in the Driftless area. That's right where I'm at, but definitely interested in other parts of the state as well.
Okay. Jolene, you want to start? And maybe Lauren has something to add as well.
Yeah, so there are many of our native species, plants, grasses, trees, that really have evolved with fire. And in the absence of fire, they can be less competitive. So then things like honeysuckle and buckthorn can take over an area. Areas can fill in to the point where those are native species that aren't shade tolerant. They're no longer competitive. They can't grow. So with the absence of the wildfires, we're seeing it's happened. The prairies and savannas, the pine barrens have essentially filled in. And it's really the reapplication of fire that can bring those communities back. Of course, you know, a wildfire can do it too, but we don't necessarily let wildfires just keep burning. We just, our policy in the state is rapid initial attack.
Yeah. Anything to add to that, Lauren?
Not too much. The only thing I was going to say is with those fire-dependent ecosystems and having the rapid attack, something that we've talked about a few times that's worth mentioning again is using prescribed fire as a tool. So you can mimic nature's processes with tools like that and stimulate a wildfire occurrence with a smaller fire that has less smoke impacts, less potential impacts to human lives and infrastructure.
Hmm. Somebody else was wondering what it takes to become a wildland firefighter for wildfires.
Yeah, so of course there's training that we have. We follow the National Wildfire Coordinating Group's training. For our own staff and our fire department partners, we put on that training. For other people, it really will depend on what it is that you want to do. So if you wanted to do prescribed burning, you can take training courses through, let's say you live in Madison and you want to help burn at the Arboretum. You could contact the Arboretum and take one of their training courses. There's other community college or technical college like Fox Valley where you can take training classes. It really depends on what you want to do. If you want to become a wildland firefighter, if you want to focus on prescribed fire, you can definitely contact me if you're interested in finding out more, and I can point you to the right resources.
Yeah. And is there a shortage? Is there a need?
Well, I would say the biggest shortage is with our fire department personnel.
Yeah.
They're primarily volunteers, and it is hard to get people to volunteer. So I would say that's where the biggest need is. The fire departments are expected to be able to fight structure fires and wildland fires, and that's a lot of training. It's a lot of qualifications to maintain, and it's a lot of time away from home. So that's definitely where the shortages are.
Yeah, I bet that would be. And it's too bad. You can understand we're all busy, But somebody has to do it, and hats off to all those people who do take their take it to heart and actually get involved in it, because it's I'm sure it's it can be quite fulfilling, but at the same time it's a lot of work, and you're just glad for those people who are willing to go ahead and do it, and also glad to have folks like you, Jolene and Lauren, out there to help with the process and making sure that we're going to have wildfires. Sometimes, things happen and fires happen, and somebody has to be there, and somebody has to be in a position like you folks are to educate people so that their own properties are not as damaged as, the house burning down. And again, you talked about online, there's information for people, and if you live in a wooded area, that's probably why Lauren's in the northwestern region of Wisconsin. There's a lot of woods there. Where do we go for online information on our own homes and how to protect our own property?
A couple of great places to start would be the DNR website. If they have a really nice interactive search bar, where if you go to their website and type in wildfire, it will take you to a number of resources that outline some of the things that Jolene has mentioned, so some of her programs across the state, the checklist that she mentioned that the foresters will do with folks on their property, and some other resources that will help you look at the risks on your property. Our website, the woodlandinfo.org, you can do something similar, type in our search bar, wildfire, and it will bring up a couple of articles that we've written about it and a quick checklist that homeowners can print and take to walk around their property if they're interested in doing an assessment before they reach out to someone in the DNR or someone else who can help them with that.
Yeah. Well, I thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. It's certainly on a lot of people's minds right now, wildfires, and while the chances are pretty low in the north right now with the snow on the ground, it won't be long before spring is here, believe it or not, and that's the time to be really on the lookout. And so now isn't a bad time to get kind of make sure your own property is as protected as it can be. Jolene and Lauren, thank you both very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Jolene Ackerman is the Wildland Urban Interface Coordinator with the Wisconsin DNR. Lauren Larson, the UW Extension's Natural Resources Educator in Forestry for the Northwestern region of Wisconsin. Great to have them with us. We'll do this again. We'll talk with them again. We're going to stay with a discussion about trees, but we're going to be talking about the benefits of urban forests, those urban trees. That coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.